Welcome to the Mostly Potted at Night. Mostly, I am Salem, joined by my co-host, Graveyard.
Hello.
This is episode 154. Yes, that's 154 of our weekly All Things Horror podcast. The horror comedy has a long and storied history. We have just scratched the surface here with our month-long spotlight on horror comedy. We cap it off with a selection of more modern horror movies so we can see if the genre has aged like a fine wine or if it's turned to vinegar. So, yes, the three movies this week is going to be Idle Hands, Tucker and Dale versus Evil, and Deadstream.
Yes, and I had only seen two of these before this.
I had seen all three.
Nice.
That's it. Deadstream is like one of those Shudder exclusive movies.
And
I usually watch them when they come up just because I always get advertised to them and I was like, oh, okay. I'll watch it. It was good enough for me to remember it, I guess. Later. Okay. So we'll start off with Idle Hands from 1999, starring a very young Jessica Alba.
Yes, I think right before Dark Angel.
Yeah. I watched some Dark Angel. I didn't watch all of it, but I am familiar with it. I did watch some of it. I know what Chimera is, so I watched enough. But yeah, so then there's like, I don't know, this is the first time I remember seeing Seth Green in something. I'm sure he was in stuff before this, but this is the first time I remember seeing him in stuff.
He was in Austin Powers before this.
Was that before this?
97, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess this felt like the first real Seth Green movie that I saw him in. How about that?
Yeah, there you go.
And even Elden Hansen, good old Foggy from Daredevil. His young self is in this movie. Okay, so anyway, Idle Hands is, it starts off with, I guess it's like a no-name slasher, right? At this point, we don't know what's going on. And it, like, parents, you know, mom and dad get murdered brutally. And then like the next day, the kid like wakes up who, you know, stays in the attic and was listening to headphones all night, which I don't know how you do that with a CD player, but he did. He was listening to his CD player all night. So he didn't hear anything. So he comes downstairs and, of course, being the high school slacker, you know, pothead dropout that he is, he doesn't notice all like the blood on the ground and all that kind of stuff and just lives his normal like lazy life, you know, like makes his cereal and then sits in front of the TV and then, you know, goes to get high and oh no, he's out of weed. So he calls his friends and he goes over there to get the weed, which is, you know, Seth Green and Elden Hansen, and then they don't have any either, but they have their own. Anyway, so we're just basically seeing him and his daily slacker pothead lifestyle, right? Yep. Then we get introduced to Jessica Alba, who like lives across the street and he's had a crush on her for a long time. And he goes over there and she drops her book and he gives her a book back. And we get kind of like a, you know, like she's at least not like disgusted by him, right?
The way he's dressed and the way he probably smells, I'm surprised.
Right, yeah. But she's like, you know, kind of wants to talk to him, but he like runs away. Anyway.
Yep.
So he like essentially gets home and he like finally discovers that his parents are actually dead.
So it's like a full day.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, after like a full day, he finally figures out, oh shit, they're actually dead. They were like disguised as Halloween mannequins. And so he like basically goes and tells his friends, you know, like, you know, what the hell's, you know, going on? I don't understand what happened. His friends come over and they're like, you know, oh shit, like they are dead. And then he ends up killing his friends. And this is where we discover that his hand, his one hand is possessed.
Yep.
And has a mind of its own. And that's how his friends got killed, was by this hand controlling his arm and killing him. So he's, you know, kind of like, you know, freaked out by this whole thing. There's like a scene where he goes to talk to Jessica Alba and like the hand is like trying to kill her, but then he like holds it back, but then the hand like grabs her ass and then she's like into it,
very into it.
So then they're like, you know, they basically like make out or whatever. He has to like tie the hand to the bed frame, but they like spend the night, whatever. So the next day he goes back home and his friends that he just killed and buried are alive, and well, alive is a loose term, but they are watching television in his front room.
Mm-hmm.
The one friend had his head cut off, so his head's like laying on the couch like next to Seth Green, who's got a big bottle sticking out of his head, and the other, and the body of the decapitated guy is in the kitchen like trying to make food without sight. So he freaks out, and essentially, yeah, they were apparently too lazy to go down the tunnel of light, so they just came back and now they're undead.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the whole thing. There's a lot of wacky hijinks where they like, you know, oh, we're dead, or, you know, whatever. They get like, there's a whole weird cop interaction where they get like shot in the head and they're still fine. So they're not zombies. I don't know. Who knows what they are. Anyway, so now he's like kind of sort of dating the girl across the street now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they made out and whatever. And so she's like, oh, you should come to this, you know, the school Halloween dance with me. So he essentially does that, right? So his friends decide to go, and since it's a Halloween dance, they don't really have to dress up. They could just go as like zombies, right? The guy is like trying to figure out what to do with his hand, right? So there's like him like trying to do stuff to be a hand. There's a weird subplot of like Vivica A. Fox is like, I don't know, a hunter of whatever is possessed his hand. They don't really explain how she like became the hunter or anything like that. Or, like, her scenes are like very out of place, I would say. There's like no information. She's just there to like cause confrontation, like to have action scenes.
Look cool.
Right. Yeah. So there's like a kind of interaction where, you know, he's fighting her, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So Jessica Alba has to go to the dance like by herself. He ends up showing up to the party. Well, anyway, he has a whole fight, whatever. And he has this genius idea of he's just going to cut off his own hand and then try to kill it. And then he's just going to go to the dance without the hand. So he cuts off his hand and he microwaves it, but it's still like alive. So he leaves it in the microwave and leaves. And then, you know, later on, after it's already gotten out, he tells his friend, oh, don't open the microwave and let the hand out. And like, oh, we already did because we were eating microwave burritos or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So the hand has gotten out. So he goes to the dance with Jessica Alba, and the two friends go to the dance because it's a Halloween party and they can just be zombies. And the hand is like by itself. So Vivica A. Fox is trying to kill the guy, not understanding that he's already cut off that possessed hand.
Right.
So yeah, they get to the dance and it's like kind of a Carrie thing where the hand like locks everybody in and then, you know, tries like burning the place down. Everybody escapes into like the vents. There's a girl who's introduced in this scene, like simply, I guess, just to die.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like Elton Hansen was like making out with her. And then both the girls like escape into the vents. And then one of them gets eviscerated in the fan.
Mm-hmm.
For that reason, whatever. So then, yeah, they end up going all over in the school, and there's like a kind of like a final stand in the school, where they're in the auto shop and Jessica Alba gets like strapped to the top of the car, and the car is like gonna crush her into the ceiling because the hand is like controlling the lever or something.
And drag her to hell, essentially.
Yeah. So they get the hand really high and then it stops, and then they like save everybody.
Yep.
Then I think that's it.
Yeah, I mean, it ends with, you know, Devon Sawa's character gets crushed by the car, but also bails on going to heaven. But his two friends do walk into light, and they become his guardian angels, essentially.
Right.
Yep. Bean. I mean, do you remember your first time watching this?
Oh, I don't. Honestly, I don't know. It's like one of those movies that's been on a million times. I mean, I probably only watched it all the way through like twice, but I've seen bits and pieces of it a lot. It was on cable a lot.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I've really loved this movie since it came out. I remember when stupidly I decided to turn in all my old VHSs into disc replay to get the DVD versions of them. I got that's one VHS I turned in to get a DVD version of it. So we're like kind of like 2003-ish. But it's always been on my list. I kind of watch it, I'd say probably every couple of years. Maybe every 2 years.
I haven't watched it in a long time. Obviously, I don't flip through cable anymore. But yeah, honestly, I don't think I watched it right when it came out. But it was probably within a few years.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I probably haven't seen it since, like, I don't know, 2010.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's currently slated to be remade and released next year. And I personally don't think that this movie can get remade in 2025 or 2026 the way it was then.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a product of its time. I mean, because there's a lot of, like, MTV-level stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I think that would be, I mean, they're probably going to go a different direction. They're probably going to do more like an online YouTube shit. There's, you know, whatever they're going to twist it modern.
Yeah.
Times somehow. But it's not going to be the same. So I'm sure they could have a similar story, but it'll be not for our generation. Right.
I think stoner comedies are pretty much dead at this point in time.
I mean, you know, and I'm kind of surprised because, you know, there's been all this legalization wave, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot that haven't, but there's a lot that is like, it's totally illegal to be high all the time. So I kind of thought there would be like a golden age of like stoner music and movies. And it really hasn't turned out that way, which is odd, which is good for me because I hate weed comedy. I really despise weed comedy. I hate weed music. I hate weed comedies, but like, I'm just kind of surprised that it hasn't happened, you know?
Completely agree.
So. Maybe because like most of the movies get made in California and California has been legal for a while. You know what I mean? I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. I have no clue.
It's no longer a niche thing.
Right. Yeah, I guess so.
It's mainstream. So, do you want to go first? Your highlights? Or you want me to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
You know, and as they talk about how fucking lazy he was, right, and how what a worthless piece of shit that he was, but you know what? When he found out that the dog was out of food, he went and bought the dog food.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's, you know, he's not that bad. You know what I mean? You know, I mean, he bought like two big bags of food. Like, he went to the store by himself without his parents, spent his own money to buy the dog food when the dog didn't need food. Like, I've seen, you know, lazy pieces of shit that they're trying to portray this kid as do a hell of a lot less than that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it kind of like was odd to me, like, oh yeah, he's a piece of shit that doesn't do anything. He's a slacker, but he goes and gets dog food when the dog's hungry. Like that's doesn't feel like a piece of shit person to me. But anyway, I just felt it was a, you know, a check mark in his good side, but it was just felt like it was kind of off with the portrayal they were trying to give at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, his dog Duke was great. I mean, he's basically missing from like the last two thirds of the film, but
yeah,
he's like a pretty major character in the first third of the film, and he's in some pretty funny scenes, like when he's like pushing the dog into the room to like see what's going on because he's scared. Like, and the dog was great. Those are some good scenes. And the cast is pretty good, right? There's a lot of people in it that, you know, very reminiscent of this time period, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, we already mentioned most of them. I think the only one that I didn't mention so far is Jack Noseworthy. I like Jack Noseworthy. I've always had.
From Event Horizon?
No, I liked him from Dead at 21. Did you ever see that?
No.
Dead at 21 is an interesting kind of trivia because it is, I believe it's the first show that MTV had that was like a fictional type, just television show. Like not a music tied in show, not a reality show. It was a original, like dramatic TV show.
Huh.
That came out. I only had one season. But I watched it and I liked it. It was like, it's like a sci-fi. Have you ever heard of it at all?
No.
Oh, it's like, it's called Dead at 21. And it's like Jack Norsworthy plays the kid who they're like, I'm just going to give you the 10,000 foot view. I'm not going to get too detailed. But anyway, so he gets like a microchip implanted into his head as a baby. And the microchip makes him super smart. Right. So he's like, you know, aced all his classes. He's like a child prodigy. He's already graduated like college at 21. Right. But the problem is that you burn out. Right. So like they call it dead at 21. Literally, like you live this like great life, like you're super smart and everything until you hit 21 and then you burn out and die.
Huh.
And so he basically hits that point of he's hitting 21 or he's just about to hit 21 and he finds out that he's going to die at 21 and he's trying to figure out who did this to him and what was going on. And that's like the show. I liked it. I thought it was pretty cool. It ended on a hell of a cliffhanger and nobody ever picked it up.
11 episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I liked it a lot. I thought it was great. And like, yeah, then I saw him in like The Outer Limits after that. Mm-hmm. And everything I've seen him in after that, I was like, oh, there's Jack Noseworthy. I always remember him because he was in the credits of the show anyway.
Right.
Don't want to go too off topic, but yeah, I do like Jack Noseworthy. Now the concept of this, right, is I know it's a comedy, but like it's terrifying to think about. Like if you just lose control of your own hand,
yep,
like that's fucked up. Like especially if it like kills your family and friends in front of you and there's nothing you can do, that's like, it really is terrifying.
Oh yeah.
I was thinking of like the reality of this. I'm like, yeah, this is framed as a comedy, but that would like be horrible.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is like The Offspring in it. I'm not a huge Offspring fan, but I did appreciate that they like did not their own songs.
Yeah,
they did like cover songs, which I was like, they could have easily just used this as an advertisement for whatever album they were pushing at the time. Mm-hmm. But no, they played like cover songs just to like be a band in this universe and not really be The Offspring. I thought that was well, they did good.
Because if you said in 1999, your Halloween dance has The Offspring, no one would believe you.
Right. But you know what I mean? This is movie world.
Yeah.
You know, they would have pretended like The Offspring weren't as big as they are, but they still would have played their own songs in the concert. You know what I mean? And they didn't do that. They played like just punk covers, which I thought was an interesting thing. You know what I mean? Like it was interesting that The Offspring weren't like, no, we're going to play our own songs. We're going to push our album. Especially as being kind of like MTV-esque as this film is.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of like music videos cut in here. I mean, there's a lot of like popular songs of the time that were cut in there. Yeah. Like, I mean, the soundtrack is nuts. I mean, you know, stuff that I like, some I like, some I don't like, but whatever. I mean, you know, like literally like Rob Zombie's like the Dracula video is like in the film. You know what I mean? It's like
just came out.
Right. Yeah. It's like, so it feels like an MTV kind of attached film. And I just thought it was interesting that The Offspring was in it and they didn't play their own songs. I just thought that was cool. I think they did in the end credits.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. But the end credits was like one of their own songs. But in the film, they played cover songs. I thought that was interesting.
Oh, I got the album just because this is the only place to get the Ramones cover.
Oh, well, there you go. I just thought it was interesting that they did a cover and not their own thing. So that's all for my headphones.
Yeah. As you said, the music, fantastic. The cast was stacked. Like, even getting Fred Willard to play the dad in, like, the opening credits of the parents getting killed. Like, to get Fred Willard, that's pretty interesting, right? I mean, is this at this movie that made me have a huge crush on Jessica Alba from this movie? She was, you know, great in it. The effects were pretty damn good. You know, there was even like the animatronic, you know, Penelope head looked decently well. I don't think that, you know, I think that even the CGI was done pretty well overall.
No, yeah, it was solid. Yeah, there was nothing that called out to me like this is garbage. Like, right. No, it was solid.
Yeah. I think the kills were fantastic, unique, and interesting. And I really, really liked that, you know, whatever he put on during this entire movie stayed on the entire time. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, my shirt has a hole in it. Yep, I'm wearing that shirt forever. Oh, I'm going to this burger drive-thru to put on this, you know, outfit to try to talk to the guy about the Idle Hands Devil's Plaything thing. And what did he do? He wears that to the high school as well. You know, he doesn't change anything. It's just an interesting way to keep his character, you know, in that short time frame, but over like what, 2 days, just to keep everything together.
Right.
I think, you know, no matter what, I think the bean burrito microwave scene, it's gross, but it's funny at the same time. You know, oh, we should clean this. I would clean the microwave no matter what. I don't think I would put my bean burrito in that microwave and still think it's okay.
In a bloody microwave? No.
No, not at all.
No, I'm not cool with biohazards.
No. That's what I got for my highlights. I'll go into my low points. You know, it was a stoner comedy, but I don't think it was it could have been heavier, but it's still interesting. But I'm not always a huge fan of stoner comedies. Is Anton a zombie now too? Like, why doesn't he look zombie like this? I know they were buried for a couple hours, but they were like gray. He wasn't at the end.
Yeah, they never expressly said if he was dead or not.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure his head would be like in a cast as well. The car fell on his head.
Well, yeah, but this is a movie.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think it's just that part was interesting. That's really my low points are those two things. Like I said, I really enjoyed this movie, but what are yours?
Again, it goes back and forth, but I'd say some of the music is terrible. It feels like an MTV like plug-in where it's like they took a little bit of music from like everywhere, right? Like anything that was popular at the time and just like threw it all in here. Some of it is good and I liked it of that time, but some of it is trash. And it's like the trash really weighs it down. I did think it was funny that like Jack Noseworthy listened to Motley Crue and only Motley Crue. That was funny. And Motley Crue, I got a bit of a soft spot for Motley Crue. Motley Crue was like, you know, in the late 80s when I was like, you know, not allowed to listen to music. It was like one of the very few albums I was able to like hide and sneak. And so it was like, I've always had a soft spot for Motley Crue. Again, I'm not a huge fan, but I've always had a soft spot for him. So I thought it was amusing that the only like not like really modern music was in it was Motley Crue.
Oh, they also had the Kiss song.
Whatever.
But yeah.
But yeah, Weed Humor. I know you said the Weed Humor isn't that heavy, but it's heavy enough. I don't like it. There's a lot of it. It's stupid. I just don't like it. But again, the whole film isn't about it, so at least there's that.
Yeah.
It's just an element that I didn't like about it. And again, the whole like Vivica A. Fox like druid plot line is pointless. There's no reason for it. They don't give you any explanation. Like she should be the one giving you the exposition dump, right? Explaining what the hand is, how it got here, right? Like how what its origin is.
Yeah, so transfer the people.
Right. Yeah. Like what's the point? Like how do you kill it forever? Like blah blah blah. Nothing. We got nothing. She was just like tried to kill it and threw knives at it, and that's it. We got nothing out of her. Like I just felt like that whole thing was pointless. Like. You could have given the information that she gave you without her even being in the film. That's I feel like it weirdly took away from the rest of the movie having these goofy scenes with her. The character was just dumb. Anyway, that's all I got.
All right, so what are our olives this week?
You know, I was sitting here thinking, I'm like, what do all the three of these movies have in common? I couldn't find any. I couldn't think of anything. So I just went with my favorite line from all three of these movies, and I went with suicide packs. So it's number of suicide packs out of 10.
All right. You want me to go first?
Sure.
So I unashamedly love this movie to no end. Do I think it's the greatest movie of all time? No, but I love it. I've never been disappointed with it. So I'm going to probably give it higher than what most people would think. I'm going to give this 9 suicide packs out of 10. It's what a movie could be coming off of like the back end with people in this movie that were kind of starting from like, you know, 90s rom-coms. All of them, the main cast, were 90s rom-coms. You know, but yeah, solid 9 for me. How about you?
I'm not gonna go that high. And it's not bad. Like, I'm not upset that I watched it again. But again, it's starting to show its age a little bit. It's not great, but it's still worth watching. But I'll give it a six.
Six
suicide packs out of 10.
Okay, that's fair.
Next up, we have Tucker and Dale versus Evil from 2010. Take it away.
This is, oh man, I sat on this movie and didn't watch it for probably 2 years.
I sat on it. It was longer than 2 years, but it was a while. It was like one of those movies that people told me it was good, and I watched the previews, and I'm like, "There's no way this movie's good. Like, this looks like one of the cheesy shit movies that I fucking hate." You know what I mean? Like, you know, I don't like the cheesy shit movies. Like, you know, the self-aware cheesy shit horror movies. I'm like, I don't like them. And like seeing the previews, I'm like, "There's no way this movie's good." Mm-hmm. And it took me a long time for like multiple other people had to tell me, "No, really, like." I understand why you don't think you'll like it, but really you'll like it. You should watch it. I'm like, all right, fine. Yeah. And I watched it. And yeah, it was great. But yeah, I sat on it for a very long time.
Oh yeah. I think is when I was getting my horror sleeve done and tattooed that I was talking to tattoo artists about this movie. And that's when it came up and I decided to watch it. So, but anyway, yeah. So this movie essentially follow the idea of the group of college kids that are going camping, right? And they go to the, you know, they need gas, they go to the weird general store, and like, oh man, there's a creepy hillbilly there, there's a guy just kind of watching them and just all that stuff, right? And as they're like, oh, we gotta get out of here, we gotta get beer, blah blah blah, and as soon as they exit the gas station, it flips on you, and now it's Tucker and Dale. Right? Like, easily subverts expectations in the first like 7 to 10 minutes, I'd say.
Well, I mean, well, yeah, we get that when they're like driving past them, right? Past them, we see them as like the evil hillbillies. Yeah. But like as soon as they get to the store, they show the other side. Like we see Tucker and Dale talking about, those girls are really cute. I should go over and talk to them. Like we get that the intro to that scene before, you know what I mean? So like we know he's not trying to be scary, but like, you have to just look at it as what does it look like for when they see it, you know?
Right. Because, you know, yeah. You know,
yeah, if you look at it from their side, and yeah, it's terrifying. It's the typical, you know, backwoods, like, hillbilly slasher, like, movie is how he's talking to them.
Yeah.
And he goes back and we find out it's only because he's, like, socially awkward and he doesn't know how to talk to people.
And he goes and talks to the girl, but he's carrying, like, a sigh. Like,
yeah, he's got a sigh. He's like, you going camping? Ha, ha, ha. You know,
yeah.
Like, being super creepy, yeah.
But yeah, you really find out this movie is about Tucker and Dale, and that they were able to buy a old house that they're fixing. And so this story is just about their friendship and being able to restore this cabin and go fishing and finally having all the stuff to save up for it. But, you know, like I said, I think that turn is great that we have being in the movie, and we're just following them as they're going doing night fishing and everything like that. You know, we get a cop going by that thinks that something's wrong. He's like, hey, don't go up there. You know, because there's an implied blowjob scene that happened,
right?
But his shirt was stuck and all that stuff. But anyway, so they're night fishing, and then we get back to, you know, to the college friends. We see the college friends telling like the campfire ghost story about, you know, 20 years ago, you know, people were up here and a ravaged hillbilly came and killed everyone. The only survivor was this one guy's mom, and they're going skinny dipping. Well, you know, we get Dr. Dale fishing and, you know, kind of being awkward and see these kids switching, and one girl gets kind of scared. She falls and hits her head. And so like, okay, we got to take care of her and get her out of the water and save her. So they did, but they're like, hey, we got your friend. And they're like, run. Hey, yeah,
we got your friend.
Yeah. The way they say it too is perfect. That's easily on my highlights there. And they're like running away scared. Like, they're like, why did they leave? Oh, let's take care of her. So now it comes become the group of college kids trying to figure out how to save their friend from this evil hillbillies. And you know, they realize that, hey, you know, when she wakes up, she was even afraid of them. She's like, no, we're fine. I'm socially awkward and all this stuff. And she gets to know them, you know, a lot more, you know, gets to know Dale a lot better and realizes he's just really a nice guy. And he has this, as she says, this condition where he's dumb, but he remembers everything he ever is told or read. So he like destroys her in Trivial Pursuit. And she realizes that, you know, maybe they were harsh to judge on this stuff. They start getting kind of sweet on each other. Well, anyway, the group of college friends trying to figure out and stage an attack. And as Tucker is trying to, you know, has the wood chipper and trying to do stuff, they start attacking and they start dying because of their own stupidity, not because of Tucker and Dale. Right. You know, so you have a guy that is attacked and, like, you know, he jumps into the wood chipper accidentally. It looks like that, you know, and Tucker's trying to get him out, but it looks like too from the college friends that, like, he shoved him into the wood chipper. You know, someone else is there digging the shithole, comes running at the spear and tries to jump at them, but falls into the pit and spears himself. You know, another guy, when Tucker's chained through a tree, he hits a beet wasp nest, starts getting stung, so he's running like a maniac through the woods holding up a chainsaw because he's getting stung to death. Another guy runs away and just gets impaled on a stick, right? And they're like, okay, well, that attack did horribly, horribly wrong. Half of us died. And they're trying to figure out what to do. And, you know, they're like, okay, well, this is weird. We got to leave a note for them. It's like, hey, we got your friend, but, you know, Dale is not all right well, so it's carved in the wood with an axe. So essentially they find, you know, they call the cops, a cop comes, and the cop comes in, like, what's going on here? And there's like a broken beam that they hinted at the beginning of the movie that they have to fix. But if you hit the beam, you know, a piece of wood with a bunch of nails would come out and, you know, swing you. But it hits and kills the cop. And so they think they killed the cop. So they get his gun and start opening fire on the house. Well, eventually they get Tucker and kind of hang him up and start to torture him a little bit. And they're kind of doing like an exchange. And so he hits his friend, but they kind of capture him again, chop off a couple of his fingers, which are Dale's luckily able to save. But yeah, essentially they go back to the house and set on fire. The rest of them, except for popped up Collar and Allison, die of the group of college friends. So now it's just like a piece of, hey, this popped up Collar college guy is a real douchebag. Because we learned his backstory was that murder did happen, that, as he said, that was true, except he said his dad died in that murder spree, but it's not true. He's half hillbilly. So he is really the true antagonist of this entire movie, and we realize that he has asthma and stuff like that. And, you know, Dale, being as smart as he is with that stuff, realizes that Camomile Tea is able to take care of that, and kind of blows in his face, like, oh, he'll be fine as long as we get him his inhaler. He falls to the barn. You know, he had chained up Allison to a wood splitter machine and all this stuff. And eventually everything seems to be okay. You know, Tucker gets his fingers kind of sewed back on, and then Dale and Allison go on a date. And they're fine. Happily ever after for them. Not missing anything too big, am I? I don't think I am.
No, I think you're good.
Yeah. Like I said, this is what a horror comedy could be. I actually was watching it with people when I was staying in the past week, and some people said this movie isn't good. And I go, I bet you if it was Simon Pegg and Nick Frost's two characters as Tucker and Dale, they would like it. They go, yeah. I'm like, I don't think. I mean, I could see them playing those two roles, for sure. But I think Tudyk and Tyler.
I was going to say that's Alan Tudyk slander. I won't stand for it.
I don't disagree. Like I said, I could see a British version of this, but not replace them for it. But yeah, like I said, I am so glad that I saw this, but I wish I didn't wait, because I probably watch this once a year at this point in time. Yeah, what was your kind of first thoughts?
I honestly don't know. It was years that I didn't watch it. When I finally watched it, I was like genuinely surprised at how well made it was. It's like, it's, you know, it's like self-aware, you know, it's trying to tell a story, like, literally from like the opposite side. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's done in a really fun way, a really good way. I mean, it's not just fun. It's like crafted in a really skillful way, you know, like, yeah, it's a comedy, but it's really fun overall. I was just very surprised. I was very surprised that this kind of film was actually done well. Because, like, there's so many movies that try to do this and fail
Mm-hmm.
And it's, and everybody thinks they're great, and I think they're terrible. This is like one of the only ones that I can say is actually done well.
Yeah, I'd say this is the gold bar standard of horror comedy that you have to meet. So, I will go first with my highlights then. Like I said, the switching of the sides I think is perfect. It's done beautifully well, and it makes you realize that, you know, like I said, the subvert expectations of it, absolutely love. I love the, you know, these kids got some sort of suicide pact. They just come around and start killing themselves. Like, how would you explain that if you're Tucker and Dale? It's really hard to explain on their side, right? And for them, it makes zero sense of why this is happening, because they don't see themselves as the bad guy. They didn't think they did anything to do that. You know, they're just trying to be the nice guy. So, like, the entire scene and the kills were just fantastic. And the cast. I could not, as I said, could not imagine anyone other than Tyler Bean and Alan Tudyk playing Tucker and Dale. I think they nail it perfectly.
Yeah, no, I get it. It's like, yeah, there's people that say, you know, people say like, oh, I think somebody else would do a better job. I don't think that's possible, because they, I mean, this is nailed. I mean, as far as like this script, they nailed it. I mean, I don't see how anybody could have done a better job.
There's no way. There's right. No way. And this is the same guy who did like Zombieland as well. So he had a knack, but he kind of stopped making movies for like 17 years after this. And there's been talks of a sequel to this for a very long time. I personally would love to see a Tucker and Dale 2.
I mean, I would, sure. I would be apprehensive, because again, like a sequel to a parody is usually like, you know what I mean? It's usually not great. They usually double down on the goofy mm-hmm. stuff. Well, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. And like I said, the line delivery from Tudyk and Levine are perfect. Hey, college kids, we got your friend. You know, it's really crafted. And of course, poor old doggy with one eye, he was a good boy.
Jangles,
yeah, he was a good boy. So then I said the kills and the effects were fantastic. How about you? What are your highlights?
Yeah, like you said, Tucker and Dale, I think, fantastic. I think that's blasphemy if somebody's saying like somebody else could have done a better job. I don't think you can. They did a perfect job, so I don't understand that. I like the whole the slasher switch up, right? That's fun. You know, we're seeing it from the other side, and it's just a big misunderstanding. You know what I mean? Like, that's
right.
It's fun yeah. That way. And like you said, there's just some great lines in the film. You know what I mean? It's crafted around, like, you know, the lines that, you know, college kids that were actually being terrorized would hear.
Right.
But they're done in a way, you know, very cleverly done in a way that, you know, they're genuinely trying to be nice and genuinely just trying to like say, hey, we have your friend. Like, you know, she's safe. Plus, we pulled her out of the water. She's not going to drown. Like, that's what they're trying to convey. But like, of course, they scream and run because they're like, oh, shit, they got our friend. They're coming for us next.
Right.
Because they're already in that mindset. And it's just, it's a very clever, you know, play on the switch, and it's done very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for high points. We go to low points. I mean, the frat bro, right? Yep. I mean, very easy to hate. I think you're supposed to. I mean, all the college kids, they're like, there's none of them that are like good, except for obviously the girl who's kind of ends up being one of the protagonists, but everybody else is just kind of an asshat, and it's, you know, they're good to hate. But yeah, they are easy to hate. Bees aren't cool. I don't like bees.
Yeah.
When they finally take the cop's gun, it is very clearly a revolver. And they shoot that gun like 25 times, like a lot. Yeah. There's no way that a revolver holds 25 fucking rounds. It's like, how are they still shooting? Like, he finally runs out, and I'm like, oh wow, like the whatever time space, you know, warp that was giving you all these fucking bullets somehow run out.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous. Okay, and then she was skinny dipping, right?
Yep.
and like, you know, she didn't get down. She was in, you know, bra and panties or whatever. But like, she wakes up and she's in like his flannel because he gave her like his old clothes, right? And then when she goes out to help him dig the shitter hole, she's wearing clothes that fit her.
Yeah.
And I think like I'm sitting there going, where the fuck did these clothes come from? And as I'm watching them like throughout the rest of the film, like you can kind of see that she like modified the clothes that he gave her to like be like, if you look closely, you can see like the little tiny like vest, you know, the halter top vest that she fashioned the flannel into is like, you can see the sleeves tied like in the back. If you look closely, and you can see like the pants, she somehow like cut and re-sewed the pants to make them fit her. And I'm like, she had maybe 15 minutes. Like, how did she modify his clothes with no sewing machine? You know what I mean? Like, what, how the fuck did that happen? I understand they're trying to like, you know, they want her to display herself, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, why don't you just give her some clothes or something? Like, I don't understand this, like, oh, I'll just make your hillbilly clothes into like sexy outfit that's super clean somehow. I didn't quite get that. And then I think there's like a double climax here, right? There's like the climax where, you know, it kind of all ends up being like the frat boy, all the other college kids are dead, and the frat boy becomes like the antagonist. Now, at that point, I think it slows down a bit. Okay. Cause like, that's like one climax, and then it has a second climax, like after they finally deal with that kid.
Right.
I just feel like that's between the two climaxes, it kind of drags a little bit. Just again, like at that point, it's not as fun and clever anymore. Then it just becomes a kind of slapstick slasher.
Right.
It just kind of loses a lot of that cleverness. And that's, you know, it is what it is. But I just felt like it slowed down a bit between there. That's all I got.
Yeah. For me, for sure, pop collar frat boy, hands down. Hate him.
Oh, yeah.
but he nailed it.
Back in those days, we used to go to like bars and shit when everybody was popping collars like that. Yeah. We used to call them warlocks. One quick story. There was one dude that we saw. He was so into the fucking pop collar shit. I shit you not. He had 3 shirts, all with different collars, and they were all popped up together. It was a triple pop. We were calling him the warlock, and he's like, "What does that mean?" The guy was such an asshole. Anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a huge thing at this time period of people popping collars. I never got it, but it was a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I'm going to say this, the college kids were kind of generic. Anyone else? It wasn't Allison or the guy.
Well, I think that's on purpose. They're just trying to say like, hey, this is your typical slasher college kid idiots, which is kind of funny because there's way more of them than there needed to be. I think they just wanted bodies to kill in different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, usually your group of college is like 4 or 5 and they were probably like 10 or 11.
Right. Yeah. That was quite a bit.
Yeah. So yes, I mean, obviously the body count is a lot higher. My God, that cabin, like, it's cool that you have your own cabin, but like, I would start by just literally clearing everything out.
Well, they didn't really have a chance. Like, they got there like that one day, right? And so they had time to like, you know, assess the situation, and then they did some night fishing because they're on vacation, and then like the whole shit started then.
Yeah.
Like, they were literally like, they were starting to do some work the next morning before shit happened. Like, they didn't have any time.
Well, in my head, the first thing would not be to start clearing wood outside and have a wood chipper at that point in time.
Well, yeah, I mean, probably not. But like, I mean, yeah, digging the hole for the toilet is probably number one.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. But yeah, but that's all I got. Like I said, the close thing is, you're right. I saw that too. And yeah, it doesn't make any sense, but it all worked out. I like your assessment of it though. So, all right. Why don't you go first for number of suicide packs out of 10 for Tucker and Dale versus Evil?
I like I said, I do like this movie a lot. It is a very fun movie. It's very well done. It does slow down a bit towards the end, but the front half of this movie is good enough to kind of power through that. But I'll give it, I'll say 8.5.
8.5. I love this movie. It's quotable. It's, as you said, it's not schlocky horror comedy. It does it very smartly. I'm going 9.5 Suicide Packs out of 10. I could watch this every month and be fine with it.
I don't know. I would definitely get tired of it if I was watching it that often.
Yeah.
All right. So now we're on to the last movie here, and that is Deadstream from 2022. And this is the one that you did not watch.
Correct. I mean, you know, this will probably be a short synopsis because, let's face it, not a whole lot happens.
Yeah, we're building on a premise here. And essentially the premise is, one, there's a YouTube creator guy who did some questionable shit and got like demonetized and essentially kicked off of his, like, you know, quote unquote YouTube platform for like 6 months. So he came back, and the only way he could get like sponsors to come back was he came up with this big idea. And the big idea was like, spend the night in a haunted house, but live stream the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes there and, you know, sets up the cameras and, you know, he talks about the horrible things that have happened in each room of this haunted house, all the people that have died there and stuff, blah, blah, blah. And then he does, you know, goofy things to, like, again, try to like provoke the spirits of the house.
All for the likes and views. Yes.
Correct. Yeah. He's just trying to get streamer people to click and, you know, like, and subscribe or whatever the fuck makes them money. I don't know what makes them money, but that's what he's trying to do. As he's doing all of that, like, he does kind of see like what could be a real ghost, right?
Yep.
So he starts getting like really afraid, and then like another girl shows up that was apparently like stalking him and knew where the house was and like came and found him. And so there's like, you know, them kind of doing paranormal investigations together until she turns on him. And he has to like stab her, and then she kind of disappears.
Oh yeah, she starts biting his neck.
Right. Yeah, she attacks him, and then he stabs her, and then she disappears. And then we slowly find out that she was the actual like head ghost of this house. The old like person, Mildred is her name.
Mildred,
she's
yep.
like from like the 1800s or something. So anyway, so as the, you know, he goes on, she's like haunting the house, and there's like these other creatures that are like part of the house, but she seems to be the ringleader. They like are kind of like subservient to her. So like there's just kind of like scene after scene of like him encountering these other monsters and him like running away and screaming, and then like asking his fans in chat for like help and what he should do, and, you know, clues and, you know, finding stuff out. But anyway, long story short, he ends up finding out that she is trapping souls in this house and making them like say her poetry so that she can have, like, you know, essentially likes and subscribes in the afterlife.
Right.
So she's kind of like an old timey streamer.
Yeah.
But doing it for souls instead of likes.
Mm-hmm.
So he comes up with this plan to like steal her souls and become the new head ghost, I guess. And then he kind of does that plan. He fucks it up once. And then, you know, long kind of drawn out fight scene where they're going back and forth. He ends up leaving the house for a while, and then he comes back in, you know, because he's decided he's going to do this. And then he does the ritual again, but this time cuts his finger off, and the sacrifice gives him the power, whatever. But then that ends up backfiring on him. And then, you know, kind of like he gets obliterated, destroyed, sucked into the netherworld, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then stream over.
Yep. Yeah, this is
there's a lot of other goofy little things that happen in there, but really those are the main, you know, the broad strokes.
Right.
Everything else that happens, it's just kind of like filler for that.
Yeah, he's realizing that he has to, you know, like I said, the cameos from other people are people like, hey, that drawing you destroyed, Yeah, that was protecting you from there. You destroyed it. You fucked up. And you find, like, the woman that, like, drew it originally 70 years ago and trying to figure out the ritual. And Sean's just trying to go in through and figure out, like, maybe I deserve this. Maybe I don't deserve this. Maybe I can survive. Maybe I can't survive. I'm a bad person. I shouldn't have done this. I understand. I'm kind of, like, repenting for my shit. And, it, like, he keeps going that cat and mouse of, will he make it out? Will he not? We don't know. Are we rooting for him or not? It's kind of just playing with that too,
right? So. Yeah, and somebody finds out because she's like, "Oh, let's do a séance," and they do a séance, and she like gives him stuff to say in like Latin, and he just says it, and then there's somebody that turns out later on, "Oh, we decoded it, and you like essentially gave her your soul," and so he's like trying to get his soul back, which is the whole point,
right?
Yeah, but again, this is all just filler for the greater arc.
Yes. Yeah. As you know, you said you saw this probably when it came out a couple years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, what did you think of it? What was your first thoughts then on this?
I mean, I thought it was interesting, right? It's an interesting kind of concept. I thought it was, you know, fun. You know, there's enough comedy to keep it going in there, right? You know, like the guy, you kind of hate the guy, right? You're supposed to hate the guy. And so it's kind of fun seeing him suffer and go through all this shit and scream like, you know, a little child when he sees scary stuff. You know, it's again, it's overall, it's a fun movie. I don't know if it's a great movie, but it's fun.
Yeah, this is, you know, my first thoughts on watching this as after just coming back from a movie set, I go, I could see us making this movie, quite honestly. It's definitely the indie found footage movie. So, like I said, I'm surprised I'd never heard of this until now.
Yeah, like I said, I was surprised too, because it's like, it's your whole thing.
Kind of what I do now.
Right.
Yeah. You want to do your highlights first?
Sure.
Okay.
In the beginning, when he's like doing his like, you know, rundown of what he's going to be doing before he even gets to the house, there's a whole bunch of like retro games and retro like stereo equipment behind him. I thought that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. I did like how he, once he got to the place and got in the house, he like went out of his way to like pull the spark plugs from his car and throw them, right? Like padlock the door and then like drop the key. Like he, like there's no way out. He like made it. It's super difficult for him to escape. Like it was fun that he thought that far ahead to like stop himself from leaving, you know, right. Because he didn't want to leave because he was scared because of his own rules or whatever. That was fun. I liked how he like had like additional cameras and he just kind of like stuck them up and then was able to like load them into his like control center thing on the fly. Right.
Yep.
Like that was kind of fun. It's, you know, the whole system that he used was kind of, you know, fantastic.
It's a great system.
Right. I was like, that's, you know, some pretty cool tech that he has.
Like salami cam.
Yeah. The beef cam. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was fun. Again, like surprisingly, the FX in this movie are pretty good.
Yep.
You know, like the blood and the stabs and even like the monster suits and stuff, like they're pretty fun. You know, I don't think this movie had a big budget. Right.
No.
But yeah, but it looked pretty good for the budget they had. Like they did a really good job with what they had for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, a lot of the blood and guts and stuff was done really well. Like I'm sure there was CGI involved, but none of it looked bad. But I thought it did decent for what it had. Like I said, I especially see like when he stabs, you know, Chrissy in the neck, like that looked legit.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I thought it was fun. Better than what it should have been. How about that?
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Yeah. So okay. So you in the horror world, and this is generally from a lot of audiences I see when people criticize in the indie world, is when you see written, directed, and starring the same person, people usually go, this is going to be shit.
Well, yeah, unless it's like a known person, right?
Right. But like indie horror, you're going to go, this is going to be shit. That's, I'm not saying that's the case, but that's what a lot of people say. And amazingly, I haven't seen bad things saying that about this movie, because it is written, directed, and starring the guy. Sean is the guy. Husband and wife team. And so I think that shows that it can be done well. And I appreciate it for that. You know, I like it. His line deliveries are fantastic. He does seem like he's truly scared. And you're like, oh, I'm hiding in this closet because ghosts don't like closets. And I'm like, I've never heard that theory before. I don't think that's true.
Well, I think he's just rationalizing himself.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, it, you know, you talk about the special effects like that, you know, the dick bite was hilarious. Also, her head's there and just bites him in the dick. Hilarious. And we talk about the camera sub, which is great. But especially in found footage horror movies, there's always that piece of it, whether big budget or low budget, is why is the camera always rolling? Like, what is the purpose of it? And I think this movie nails why he has so many cameras, why he set it up, and the practical uses of it all, right? Like said, the salami cam, the fact that after he hit the ghost in the head with the hatch, he attached a GoPro to her so he could see where the ghost is moving. Like, it has some of the best explanations of why he is currently constantly filming and not putting the camera down, because it's a live stream. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, so we discussed before, like, you know, like Chernobyl Diaries, is the camera guy originally a character and they just cut it out? I don't know. It seems like it's a found footage movie, but it's not. This, I think, nails it perfectly. I said the effects were pretty damn good for an indie horror movie. So I like that. I roll into my low points. I know I stream, but that type of live streamer bullshit, I cannot stand. You know what I mean? It's I understand this is what people do, and to me it just seems, and at this point it's just so fake and so disingenuous, I can't stand it. I don't know, maybe that's weird for me.
I mean, that's just the world we live in now. There's a lot of people who make their living by doing this stuff, and again, they do whatever will get more people engaged.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, a lot of this stuff comes off as really, really fake because, again, they're looking at like what the market wants them to do, what they think will get more likes and subscribes. And they just do that no matter how fake it is, no matter how counter it is to like what they're about.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. They're just like they're the definition of a sellout. Right.
Yep.
In the modern day, there is really no sellouts anymore. Like, right. Sellout is the default line now. Like, everybody is a sellout, like, period. Like, if you're on YouTube as a creator, you are a sellout. Like, that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
And it just moves up from there. Whereas, like, you know, back in the old days, it was like, you know, you had to get to a certain point before you were considered a sellout. And now it's like, in order to get in that world, you have to be a sellout to, like, start. It's right. Just odd.
Yeah. Right. Which is why we see so many people, like, I've been doing this channel for 10, 12 years. I'm going to do something I actually want to do now. Like, wow, that's weird to think of it that way. Like, this isn't something that they grew big and got millions of subscribers, followers doing something they actually don't want to do.
Right. Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's like they get into it because they want to make money streaming, right? So, like, yep. You know, what do kids watch? They watch, like, what, fucking Minecraft, right? So they've been playing Minecraft for, like, a decade. But, like, they hate Minecraft. But it's like that's what they have to do to get engagement. Like, what do they really want to play? Like, oh, I want to play, you know, RPGs or something. But if they played RPGs, yeah. No one's going to watch it.
Yep.
It's sad. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's sad. It but yeah, that's the price you pay, I guess.
It is. I like his line, but I hate that. This live satanic pagan.
Pagan. He says pagan. Yeah, which I thought was hilarious.
But I'm like, okay, that's, I understand he's supposed to be stupid. Okay. You know, your car is more than two spark plugs, but also spark plugs are notoriously difficult to change in a car.
You need changing a car plug in the dark with just a wrench. Correct.
Yeah.
I understand. I was congratulating the concept of that, not the logistics of that.
Correct. And then throwing it into the woods. I'm like, God damn. Like, how he, even if he wants, even when he makes it through the night and he wants to sleep, it's going to be a pain in the dick to ever be able to get out of there. to find the key to unlock the door and to go find the spark plugs and then put them in there properly so his car will start is bullshit.
Yeah, because spark plugs have to be put in with like a torque wrench. Like they need to be put in a very specific way.
Yeah.
And they're usually you have to take off a bunch of shit to get to them.
Uh-huh.
So yeah.
Yeah.
And those spark plugs were also brand new.
They were, and then
they were not used spark plugs in any way.
Right. And two spark plugs isn't going to be necessary a whole lot.
A car, if you take out spark plugs, it's going to not work.
You can just take out one, but throw it into the woods. That's just a pain in the dick.
Correct.
And there'd be dirty, and there'd be like, there has to be a certain gap in spark plugs for them to fire. So even if he wants to leave when he's done, he's not going to be able to leave.
Right. It would have been better to just throw your car keys into the woods.
Right. Right. Okay. He stabs a ghost and it bleeds. He shoots up a bobblehead through a ghost and it goes through him and it impales. Ghosts don't get hurt that way like human bodies do.
Well, he injected holy water into a ghost's head and it blew up.
That too.
Ghosts can become like non-corporeal, like at will, right?
Yeah.
So like, why don't they just like phase out before they get hit?
Right.
Because they like the ghost that he blew up its head, it like came out of the water in the bathtub. Like obviously it wasn't there before.
Yep.
I don't know. But yeah. Ghosts, I don't think can be effectively fought with physical objects.
And yet he does it constantly in this entire movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they do become solid sometimes, but yeah, I don't know. Logistics of ghost fighting.
I've never seen a ghost fall downstairs and get knocked out. Let's just go with that.
In a comedy movie, I guess they do.
Sure. I thought for sure the twist would be like, oh, these are just real people, and he was set up and killed people. He's fully canceled. And I'm not sure how I like the ending. Like, I don't know if did he deserve to live? Did he not deserve to live? Did he win? Did he not? Like, he took over and did the sacrifice, but now all these other ghosts are going to get him. So what's different with him versus the old lady that he interviews that does the same spell?
Maybe they're like pledging themselves to him, but in the ghost way, that's not pleasant.
Right. I don't know. I'm up in the air about the end of this movie. I haven't decided whether or not I like it. Those are my low points. How about yours?
I mean, YouTube content creators, I'm not a fan. Mm-hmm. Just in general. Like interacting with his fucking chat all the time. It was like, oh, just shut up. But again, that's the point. They're trying to get that point across. I know, it's still just painful. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of old stuff in that house that doesn't look very old. Like, some of it they did a good job with. Some of it looks like they just picked it up at a secondhand shop. You know, like, it doesn't look very old. Like, I think a good example of that is, like, the basement. When they open up the trunk and they find, like, Mildred's clothes in it,
mm-hmm.
those clothes look like they were brand new. Like, they were just dry cleaned.
Yes.
And then they find, like, an old beat-up box. The old beat-up box look like, okay, that could have been from the time period. But, like, the clothes look like cosplay clothes. Like, they were brand new.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I'm like, okay. So like, yeah, some of it looks good, some of it not so much.
Yeah.
And then like being waterboarded with your own urine, like, no, thank you.
What?
I'm not cool with that.
Oh, okay.
That's all I got.
All right. I guess I'm first for the Suicide Packs out of 10 for Deadstream. Oh, this is, I've seen it once. Will I watch again? I think so. I think this is something that I will watch with the wife because I think she'd enjoy it. Is it the greatest thing out there? No, it's not. But it is interesting and changes things, and he does portray the streamers that we all don't like. So I will give this 7 Suicide Packs out of 10. How about you?
Yeah. I don't think I like it quite as much as Idle Hands, but it's around there. So I'm going to go 5.75.
All right.
Anything else you want to add there?
No, bring us home.
All right, so that concludes our month-long spotlight on the horror comedy. But don't fret, we shall return with more at some point in the future. There's plenty more where that came from. Mm-hmm. So in the short term, we'll be taking a bit of a break here. We'll be out of tune for about a month or so. To be TBD, I guess is how they say it, but hopefully not more than a month. But we'll return with a vengeance to tackle one of the biggest franchises in horror history. That's right. We'll be filling up our calendar with all Friday the 13th because we're going to Camp Crystal Lake with all of the Friday the 13th films. So join us in that when we return.
I literally just watched half of them this past week too.
See, that's your own fault.
It was other people's fault, but yes.
See, I know they're coming. I got the list. So remember, we watch bad movies so you don't have to.
And this has been Graveyard saying, have you checked in the children?
This is Salem saying, long live the new flesh. Amen.